The regularly scheduled, don't tell me, June 11th, San Luis Coastal School Board meeting. Good evening, Mrs. Devitt. Nice to have you with us. So let me find myself here. So in closed session, we had a discussion regarding CASSIE waivers, which the board will take action on in the action consent agenda. We had a conference with real property negotiators and provided board input. We had a negotiation conference regarding the assistant superintendent of business. During closed session this evening, the board, on a motion by board member Marilyn Roger, seconded by board member Ellen Sheffer, the board voted 6-0 to approve a retirement agreement with Russell Miller, assistant superintendent for business and physical support services. Mr. Miller's retirement from the district will be effective August 31st, 2013. Mr. Miller, I'm over here getting verklempt and somebody's cheering. Mr. Miller has served this district since 2000. Chris and I, we have to take a share in the responsibility of bringing him to our district. And he's been responsible for shepherding its financial and fiscal resources with great skill and care. During his tenure, Mr. Miller has been successful, I'll just call him Russell, for building the district's reserves for economic uncertainty, something that was basically prescient and has helped us through some very difficult times, as most of you folks in this room are well aware. He's helped in securing adequate funding and resources for Fund 20, specifically to support post-retirement health care coverage for our employees and other critical, maintaining beautiful and safe schools and campuses and grounds throughout the district, and ensuring adequate funding for district's initiative for student success, leading to high-caliber student programs and ultimately higher student achievement outcomes. And we should keep in mind that this was done during some of the most troubling and financially difficult periods that this district has ever faced, certainly in my time on the board. And he has developed a process to ensure a balanced budget despite state reductions in revenue to San Luis Coastal. This means that our days of deficit spending, which we never wanted to do anyway, have been brought to an end, and it's a great relief to this board, and it should be a great relief to the community as well. And he's successfully negotiated compensation schedules that reflect the highest respect for all of our employee groups, and I think he's brought a transparency and an honesty and integrity to the process, which is really done amazing things with our relationship with our bargaining units. And serving as a respected and trusted voice among employees and the executive team and the school board for all matters pertaining to protecting our fiduciary status as a school district. For these right reasons, Russell Miller should be acknowledged and will be missed. He has served San Luis Coastal with great professional acumen and leaves our district in a much better place as a result of his efforts. And we wish him well in retirement, one that he has earned by any measure.
Thank you. And Mr. President, just a couple. I'm a firm believer in brevity, so just in the sense that I'll try not to shoot from the hip on this one, but I really want to appreciate the kind words. They were very well received, and I just want everybody to know that the pleasure of the last 12 years has been all mine, that there is absolutely not one moment in 12 years that I've regretted my association and service with San Luis Coastal. From this board and previous boards, they've been excellent support structures for the staff, for the superintendents I've worked with, the assistant superintendents, all top-notch. Our staff, so I've looked back on these 12 years with just the fondest recollections and the greatest feelings. And every one of you have been absolutely wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you, Russell. I'm just going to say one other thing, and then I'm going to open it up to any other board members who'd like to comment. I was on the visiting team that went up to Russell's previous school district, and it is a rare thing in life when you get exactly what they tell you you're going to get. And the one thing they said over and over, so many different employees, oh, Russell will tell you directly just what he thinks. And I think we found that to be true. So, Chris, would you like to go ahead?
Yeah. And I just want to say thanks, Russell, for all you've done for us. 12 years, I can't believe it's been 12 years, 13 years, really. And when you came on at a time when there were really some really serious difficulties with the district. I talk about the first board meeting when we were here, and I think the first vote we ever took, Walter, was to not accept the money from Jack O'Connell for the swimming pools, knowing that we had lost 10% of our budget within 6 months. It was a terrible time. Plus, there was a lack of confidence in the administration, and there was a lack of confidence in the business office. And I think if nothing else, all those other things being true, you brought that sense of trust back, that the numbers are the numbers are the numbers, and the numbers don't lie. You know, the old facts, damn lies and statistics. And I think we all felt that your numbers were always accurate. I just want to remind people that you were also on the CISC board of directors, helping out to make sure that our insurance rates were kept down and that the coverage for our employees was kept as good as it could possibly be. I think you're the dean of the San Luis County CBOs. You're the longest, you are currently the longest serving CBO. My understanding is that you're recognized as one of the top CBOs in California. And if nothing else, we know that because we hear these rumors about how people tried to poach you from us, you know. And I just want to say we're glad that you resisted those seductions, and good luck in your retirement. Oh, and the other thing is, you know, I think we could all do Russell a favor tonight. We could call this the Russell Miller meeting. And
I hope that's good, Mr. Miller. I can't believe that many years either. Oh, my goodness. I have a little something for you. I would like you to share the note with yourself. But the item is the symbol for wisdom. Being the teacher that I am, we're going to see how many of them get it.
And the last dirty trick we played on them was we told them we weren't going to make a big deal out of anything. So, anybody else would like to? Oh, I'm sorry.
We're going to see if they know what it is.
You're going to open?
Yeah, Mary Jo wanted me to open.
Oh, good.
I think.
I do, yes. I want to see if they know, if they guess what the symbol for
American
is.
American Expedition. Stoneware coffee mug. And it's going to help me in my retirement. Oh, wise owl. The wisdom of an owl. That's what it is. Thank you, Mary Jo.
They also prey on the... there you go. That's beautiful. Okay. Marilyn, go ahead, please.
Okay. I'm going to be brief. Everyone who knows me knows that I cry easily, and I've already started, and I haven't started to speak. I would like to thank you, Russell, for being both a good friend and a good steward of our finances over the time that I've been on the board. One of the things about you that I appreciate the most is your willingness to speak plain English to people who are not familiar with that aren't, you know, CPAs or accountants or what have you, to reduce very complex ideas into simple statements that even I can understand, and your willingness to repeat over and over as many times as I ask you to explain it to me. I mean, that has been so helpful to me as a board member. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. I appreciate your honesty, and I appreciate your willingness to...
Half of, in memory or in acknowledgement of Russell Miller, we're going to donate a book to each of our four preschool programs starting next year. So on behalf of the school district, in honor of you, Russell, there you have it.
Thank you. All right, let's get the work done. In memory of Russell, we'll get the work done fast. And the next item is consensus on the order of business. Everybody happy with that? Yes.
Did you have an item that you were considering withdrawing?
As it turns out, the item is in the advanced agenda discussion, so we can just move it forward to the next meeting and have the discussion when Mr. Buckman's able to be here.
Thank you.
Let's see. So we'll go on to approval of the minutes. We have two sets. The first is the set for the May 21st, 2013 meeting. I'll entertain a motion on that.
I will move to accept the minutes of the May 21st meeting.
Second. Okay, it's a motion by Mrs. Sheffer, a second by Mr. Questenberry. Are there any discussions, corrections, or additions? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, passes 6-0 with one absent. And we'll move on to the minutes of May 28th, 2013.
I move to accept the minutes of the May 28th, 2013 meeting.
I'll second that. Motion by Mrs. Eisendrath Rogers and the chair. Any discussion, additions, corrections? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed, passes 6-0. Oh, you were.
I'm sorry, I have to abstain.
Okay, passes 5-0 with one abstention. Thank you, Marilyn. And we will move on to public input. Is there anyone in the public who would like to address the board on an item that is not on the agenda? Did I go by correspondence? Oh, I don't want to miss correspondence because we had a letter from a Laguna Middle School student, Allison Lucero, regarding the choir program and her concerns about the choir program not continuing. And I hope that that there was a response from staff to the student. Good. Thank you. Thanks, Chris, for pointing that out. And now we'll go to public input.
Okay. We have a request to speak.
Okay.
Mary Jo Devitt, San Luis Obispo. I attended the San Luis High graduation on Friday, which was wonderful. Nice job, Dr. Prater. And I think that... oh my goodness, here she is with four children and a salutatorian. At any rate, I think it's remarkable. It's a difficult program. It's not that it's a difficult program in that it's a hard program, but it's that going back and forth in the Spanish and the English and the whatever, and I think it's very commendable to the school that they have that honor. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Mary Jo, for highlighting that. And Jim, do we have?
Yes, we have Gail Stoneberg from the Assistance League.
Good evening. I am Gail Stoneberg, president of Assistance League of San Luis Obispo County. Since 1995, we have been providing new school appropriate wardrobes to children in need throughout our county. Operation School Bell is our major philanthropic program. As an organization, we recently realized that after all of these years working in your school district and with your school personnel, that we have never come before you as a board to familiarize you with our program. We are a 501c3, all-volunteer, nonprofit with less than 75 active members, contributing over 14,000 hours annually in order to provide new school clothing to our county children. This last year, we clothed 1,136 K through 6 grade students with new shoes, jackets, jeans, shirts, underwear, and dental hygiene kits. In addition, we provided new school appropriate clothing to 286 7th and 8th grade students. We believe new clothing picked out by these children and sized to fit allows them to feel more comfortable with their appearance and improves their self-esteem, and allowing them to focus on schoolwork and not worry about how they look. This year, Assistance League clothed 217 children in your district. I have a letter to present to you this evening that breaks it down by school, if you're so interested. It has been our pleasure to work with your district faculty and staff to make a difference in the educational experience of these children by providing one of the most basic needs, clothing. It is our goal for these children to succeed and become productive citizens.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Millar, I would just say that a couple of years ago I attended the opening of the your store. And it was a lovely experience to see how nicely things were arranged. It looked just like a walking into a miniature Kohl's or something with the racks and the shoes and the way everything was arranged. And it was, I really appreciate the thought that goes into making it as true to a real shopping experience for the students as possible. So thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay, we'll close public comment and we'll move on to the state of the budget update. Is that a swan song?
Thank you. I think that this has been a week of some significant movement on the state legislature's part related to school funding. Not so much as it impacts San Luis Coastal, but more that it is a statewide issue. And I think some of the significant events of this this past week are that the state has recognized a 12% increase in funds for the month of May, which is a lot of money, and that the Legislative Analyst Office's prognostications for the future year are higher than what the governor is using for his budget allocations, so that bodes well for the future. In addition to that, the Democrats in the Assembly have reached a compromise with the governor in modifying his local control funding model. And what has happened, the Democrats in the Assembly have always objected to the amount of money that was allocated in the pool three or tier three of the new funding model, which is the concentration grant for districts. They were going to give, if you had 50% or more of the English learners and low income, then you would get a concentration grant equal to 30%, I think it was, of the base funding model. And what most Democrats wanted was for some of that money to go to the base funding instead of to the concentration grant that would affect a small number of urban school districts to the disadvantage of other urban allocation. And so he took that money from pool three and the additional revenues that are being realized at the state level and put it on the base funding model, the base funding limit. What that does for San Luis Coastal, just to bring to conclusion, is that it will play out that we will potentially move from basic aid to revenue limit in 4 to 5 years instead of 8 to 9. By increasing that base funding amount, it puts us that much closer to exceeding our basic aid property tax amounts in the future. That's neither good nor bad. Whether we're basic aid or whether we're revenue limit, the determining factor for positive or negative is the amount of money. So we're always interested in receiving more money, and as a revenue limit district in 4 to 5 years, the calculation at the moment, based upon assumptions we've made, is that we will move into a revenue limit status in 4 to 5 years. And that's neither good nor bad, but that's the way it is. So I think overall the state has moved forward with a recognition of the value of education, and they're allocating more money putting most districts into the same level of funding they enjoyed prior to the recession. So the pre-recession funding was the battle cry of the districts asking for more. They wanted to be put back to their 07-08 funding level, and apparently that's going to be achieved. The only caveat I will give you is that this is all speculative until the language is developed and voted on by the Assembly and the Senate and signed by the governor, and hopefully that will happen in short order. It's fully expected we will have an on-time budget, which means June 15th or 14th at this particular stage, and it'll be in a positive sense for education.
So in this 4 to 5 year time frame where we may be, we are likely to become a revenue limit district, will we be a revenue limit district with our current revenue limit amount, which is like 5,000?
No.
Okay, it's been added to. Right. Can you make a prediction as to what that amount is likely to be?
Somewhere around $8,000.
And we'll get to it later, I guess, that 18.
We're clearly not a wealthy basic aid school district. You know, the fact that we would fall into revenue limit shows, where are we? 10th out of 11 districts in terms of revenue limit in San Luis Obispo County. And I just, again, would remind people that we're not a Palo Alto. We're not an Atherton or someplace like that. We need to watch our money and be careful with what we've got.
One of the difficulties for the board in the next 4 to 5 years is going to be to adjust the culture to the idea that we're now revenue limited. It changes a lot of things, the importance of attendance accounting, the importance of watching our budgets more carefully. But ultimately, you're absolutely right, Chris, that there are going to be at least three districts in the county of San Luis in 5 years that are going to be extremely better off than we are, in a sense, because their mix of low-income EL students is such that the amount of concentrated grants they're going to get is going to drive them in excess of us. We will be lucky to be middle of the road in terms of revenue in the next 8-9 years. So we need to prepare ourselves in the sense of how we spend our money on salaries, benefits, and other programs for the outcome of not being able to adjust our spending to our program needs, but more or less putting our program needs at the forefront of our resources.
Right. And I think it's just to point out that when you talk about our revenue limit and our basic aid at about $8,000, I know the old figures were that Shandon would have a revenue limit of about $12,000, so $4,000 more than we will. Of course, they have a very high-need district.
Yeah.
Lots of poverty and second-language students there, so, you know, we'll see, but, yeah.
Exactly right.
Thank you. Mr. Miller, you already sort of answered this question with a kind of a broad brush, but now that we've made the decisions regarding this year's budget, and we're going to bring our deficit. We're going to try erase our deficit. And what is the word I'm looking for? That we have a balanced budget.
We have a balanced budget.
I wonder if you would be able, just off the top of your head, to speak to
Eric about this in the past. This is that resources are going to be essential for us to be able to modify and promote different kinds of programs. The problem with districts that don't have reserves is they get embedded in the current programs with no resources to change. Professional development, materials, the Common Core standards are going to put immense pressure on our district's budget, and we have to be prepared for that. There's a number of different things that are keynote in terms of looking at our fiscal health for the next 3 to 5 years. But foremost is the modification of our salaries and benefits to revenues till it gets to 84%. And by the way, we are at 86.5%, not the 88 we thought. We actually did better in the sense of cutting salaries, retirements, and other things that brought our spending as a percentage of revenues to 86.5%. But that extra 2.5% represents $1.7 million that will be necessary, opinion of one, in order to pigeonhole the resources to make modifications. There's a number of other things. Maybe I could do something in terms of a Friday update for Eric and let him share it with you as my thinking. I'm shooting from the hip now.
And I don't mean to put you on the spot.
That's okay.
But
I'm just talking to Catherine right now. But
I'd love to have it in a Friday update.
No problem. I can
Thank
do
you.
That. Thank you.
There you go. Eric, did you want to?
Oh, I was preparing for the next agenda item.
You mean the introduction of the update on Common Core standards by Dr. Delkiskamp and Mrs. Shields?
Yes, so as I was front-loaded, I'd like to introduce our stellar assessment teachers on special assignment leaders. This is Mrs. Erin Lunds and Mrs. Darla Batistic, and they're going to talk to you about the new assessment system in California coming our way.
Good evening. In tonight's Common Core update, we'll take a look at the Common Core aligned assessments in ELA and math being created by the Smarter Balanced Assessment Consortium, fondly known as SBAC. Smarter Balanced is a state-led consortium working to develop next-generation assessments that accurately measure student progress towards college and career of our new statewide assessment system in the 2014-15 school year. In the spring of 2015, the full system of summative assessments for students in grades 3 through 8 and in grade 11 will be administered to SBAC's 25 member states. This assessment will become one of our new measures of state and federal accountability. So how do we get there? This fall, SBAC released a limited number of released items to the public. We'll be showing some of those to you in just a few minutes. In the spring, SBAC conducted a scientific pilot of their items. More than 5,000 schools from across the country participated, including two of our elementary schools, and we'll hear from them a little bit later. In May, SBAC released full-length practice tests for students in grades 3 through 8 and in grade 11 in both ELA and mathematics. These are available online to the public. Beginning in August, SBAC will release interim and formative assessments designed to monitor student progress throughout the year. It's our hope that the state will purchase or provide funding for these interim and formative assessment tools so that students have a chance to have multiple experiences with this type of assessment before the SBAC summative assessments become one measure of accountability for schools and districts in the 14-15 school year. And next year, SBAC will conduct a field test of their computer adaptive testing system, and some of our schools will possibly be selected to participate in that field test.
One of the chief differences between our current testing system, STAR, and the coming SBAC assessments is testing administration. Currently, district and site personnel spend hours ordering and counting STAR materials, sharpening pencils, and counting the materials once again. SBAC tests are given through an online system, which is relatively easy to set up and use. Another main difference between STAR and SBAC is that SBAC assessments are computer adaptive. Traditional paper and pencil tests, although there are often different versions, are fixed form. For example, each student that took grade 4 CST math this year answered 65 items. However, here's another difference between STAR and SBAC, the variety and types of items. Here we see a traditional STAR paper and pencil item in which the student chooses one correct answer about a story they have read. On the other hand, many SBAC items ask students to use their mouse to click to answer questions. Here the student would click and drag the events in order from the story into chronological order. is a math sample item from STAR. Again, the student would bubble one of the four choices, hopefully the correct one. Darla had to correct me on that one earlier. This is a sample SBAC item. You'll notice that they still get to select from options, but here there are actually two correct answers, which are visual models for 17 times 12. And that last item is a really good example of why SBAC does not use the term multiple choice. They use the term selected response. Selected response items prompt students to select one or more options from a set of stimuli. So SBAC also uses other types of items. They call them constructed response, technology enhanced, and performance tasks. And we're going to show you a few of those to illustrate them, hopefully. This first one's called Swimmers. This is the fifth grade technology-enhanced constructed response item in which students watch the animation and then respond to the prompt by typing a paragraph. By clicking about this item at the top, you can learn more about each item and how it is scored. So which standard it aligns to, what grade level, and then there's also a rubric for each item. This item is actually worth 1 point. So they type the whole paragraph and they either get it right or wrong. The next item we're going to look at is Fractions 1. This is a third grade selected response item, and the student must select yes or no by looking at the number line. So the first one, yep, yes. Nope, that one doesn't match. That one doesn't match. That one looks right. No. So, and again, this is considered one item. So whereas STAR, they would have chosen A, B, C, or D. Here they have to select yes, no correctly for each of those five to get the points. The next one we're going to do is integer expression. On the released items, it will tell you whether or not they're right. The full-length practice tests, they're releasing the rubrics July 1st, so we'll be able to see which ones of those we get right or wrong as well. But right now, these are kind of neat because you can go in and try them and see if you get them right. And that was a seventh grade item. And so this next one, water tank, is a high school item. And students use their mouse to click on the water in tank A so that the volumes match in tank A and tank B. And then they have to go down at the bottom and select the correct answer and drag it into the box to get that one correct. The other type of item that's very different from STAR is a performance task. You received a link to two performance tasks in your packet, and there's also additional ones on this website and in the practice test. Performance tasks measure a student's ability to integrate knowledge and skills across multiple standards and will be used to better measure capacities such as depth of understanding, research skills, and complex analysis. Performance tasks may incorporate media and/or text stimuli, a teacher-led classroom activity, collaborative group work, and then will require students to independently answer constructed response questions and then either write a lengthy composition, sometimes a letter, sometimes a story, or solve a complex math problem.
Can I ask just a couple of mechanical questions? Those boxes you opened that talked about the rubric, and are those are not accessible to the student, right?
They won't be. These are the released items. Okay. So on Darla's first slide, all of the ones that are released are items that we can always use with students, and the rubrics and the answers are out there. But the pilot test had items on it that students had never seen before, and they aren't allowed to see it. But these are ones for us to use as professional development and see what the items are going to look
like. And then the other question is there a concern that some students who don't have access to technology and are as comfortable with dragging and clicking? I mean, with as many computers as we have in our elementary schools, I can't imagine, but is that a concern? Is there a way to provide input or additional support to a student who doesn't have that kind of access?
I'm going to let Darla finish, and then I think she's going to answer that one for you.
As one of our observations. First, we'd like to thank the students and teachers at Los Ranchos and Hawthorne Elementary Schools for participating in the pilot this spring. They participated with enthusiasm And just as the Common Core are a more rigorous set of standards, the SBAC assessment is more rigorous in order to measure student progress against those standards. All students will need to develop the stamina required by this higher cognitive demand. However, it was great to note that the students found these assessments much more engaging and enjoyed the variety of item types. Prior to our pilot, our district completed SBAC's Technology Readiness Survey, which indicated that our sites did meet the recommended specifications for this testing. And for the most part, during the pilot, students were able to complete the assessments without any major technology issues. As we delve further into implementing the Common Core, the SBAC practice and pilot tests have highlighted some necessary changes to instructional practices and experiences that students will need to have in order to be successful. Even our youngest students will need opportunities to independently solve problems and write compositions from pre-write to final draft on a computer. All students will need many experience with computers before entering the third grade. And I think that kind of addresses one of your concerns. So what are we doing in San Luis Coastal to get ready for Common Core testing? All of our students have been participating in district common assessments that are focused on tasks in mathematics and writing. Our teachers have participated in professional development aimed at analyzing student work and using Common Core aligned rubrics. Students in grades 3 through 6 participated in computer adaptive testing in reading and in mathematics, and some of our secondary students have participated in computer adaptive assessments through intervention programs offered at their schools. Our content area specialists and instructional coaches are working closely with teachers to develop an understanding of the rigorous expectations of the Common Core standards and SBAC. We'll continue these practices next year, and in addition, we're hoping that all students will have an opportunity to participate in the online practice tests so that all students can see what the expectations will be for them in the coming year. And now let's hear from the front line about our own SBAC pilot testing.
It required more than one answer, and our students weren't used to that. So a lot of them struggled to find 2 or 3 answers to a question if it was a multiple choice question. Also, a lot of the questions required some typing, some free response typing. And we noticed that some of our students who probably would have written quite a bit more had they had a pencil in hand, really were reluctant to put a lot of effort into their responses because it simply took a long time. So that made us teachers realize that we need to put more effort into teaching typing skills. Overall, I think it was a successful pilot, and we look forward to what the new test will bring to our district and how we can help our students succeed.
So far, I think also the SBAC is going to be a really useful assessment for teachers. I think it's giving us a lot of examples of students showing their learning in different ways. And so it's really going to give us a well-rounded understanding of how well they know certain material because they get to show us in a variety of ways and get to express themselves a lot more versus just the STAR test with fill in the bubble.
It's cool. It's easier than taking a big bubble test on paper and like, it's less complicated.
Most of them are pretty easy, but I think it'd probably be better if it was just mostly multiple choice, not just typing most of the answers.
Well, it kind of takes a while because you have to write like a passage of your own. But I thought it was pretty good.
It's much better than the STAR test, and then my hands get tired writing, which is easier typing.
It's different because, like I said, there's more stuff to interact with, and you can actually write paragraphs. And yeah, it's better.
Kate, and did you have more presentation or should we go to questions?
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead, Ellen.
I just have a question. Is there currently any kind of, or in anticipation of this, any sort of surveying done early in the year of students and their families to find out what students have computer availability, not just computers at home, but computers that are available to the student to make sure so that those families or students who don't have computers at home that the student can use, they can get some extra help in typing and...
My question really concerns these items or the tests that will now be available. The interim informative tests, are we going to implement these in the coming year? They're available. Am I correct that they're available and they can be implemented?
They're not yet available. They should be available starting in August. And it is an extra cost from SBAC. We're hoping that the state, in order to provide this information to all of the districts in California, is looking at funding it. They had mentioned it at one point, so we're still kind of waiting for them to be rolled out and to hear from the state on whether or not they're purchasing them.
Okay. And so I guess that since we don't know exactly what's available, we're not really thinking yet about what of our own assessments they would replace or how they're going to work with them yet.
Exactly, but it's in the plans to be thinking about it.
Yeah, I know that one of the things in the governor's budget is a proposal for, I think it's about, what, $1.5 billion now for the implementation of the Common Core standards. Will that include helping students be able to familiarize themselves with the differences with the SBAC tests? And the other thing, I'm just thinking about what Mrs. Sheffer's saying. I think when we look at our resources, one of the things we might have to consider is, can we extend school hours and open up some of the computer labs for students and families after school, not only so they can have access to it, but so that they can be more successful on the tests. So I guess my question first is, the question I had was about the whether we could use some of that CCS implementation money for the SBACs.
Well, I for one would say we certainly hope so. I think what has come to light very clearly is the need for our kids to be able to be comfortable and fluent on computers. We know they're fluent this way. We want to make sure they're fluent this way as well. The conversation that's been happening at the elementary level is third grade the right age to start kids at keyboarding, which is currently what we do in our district ed tech plan. We don't want to go too young because we get into those issues of their finger size, hand size, et cetera. But we also don't want to be late
to show us what they were doing with their notepads. And so I went to visit their class, and it really is dramatic to me how quickly in 1 year these children were able to just move through all the various things they could do, all the tasks, and then when they're done with their work, how they can move on to do something on their own. Very similar kind of questions and challenges that we have there. So it's very clear to me that the sooner we can get enough of those notepads, those iPads, whatever, Kindles, whatever version we get, into the hands of as many children as we can, the more we advantage them, you know, in being able to do this kind of study and access things like Khan Academy, where they can move on their own pace and, you know, move ahead. And, you know, we got to put them on an even par with the other kids who are taking that test.
I think it's very clear that when you look at a class like Mrs. Camo, where she had a one per child access to computers, the tablet, on a daily basis to any other class in our district, those kids are already at an advantage and ready not only for SBAC, but for our education of the future. So I would certainly agree with you.
Yeah, great job with this, ladies.
Yeah, I have one last question, too, and that's in regard to the teachers that responded. Did you have any responses that were less than enthusiastic?
Actually, no. We worked with six different teachers, three from each site, and they were very enthusiastic to participate. And they weren't volunteers. The pilot was a scientific pilot conducted by SBAC, and they told us which classrooms, which schools, and which grade levels, and which test they wanted the students and teachers to be involved in. And also, I didn't give a shout out to the principals, but both of the principals from that school were also very excited to participate in the pilot. I think everybody's curious at what that new test looks like, and we were just really pleased that the students and the teachers came in fully excited to participate and gave it their all. It was a good.
If I may, I would add to that our two assessment TOSAs hand walk those piloting teachers through from step A to step Z to make sure if there were any flaws or any mishaps, they were covered, they were ready to go, and they did a really great job of that.
Okay. Dr. Prater.
Yeah, I just would like to, first of all, commend your presentation and to encourage a climate of risk-taking with our staff. And so I would like to piggyback onto what Mr. Miller mentioned earlier around the budget conversation about our resources. And Common Core, I know the words are being used. We love to use fancy words all the time. The truth is, the amount of money the governor allocated, $173 per child, for the development of the preparation of Common Core, is truly just a scratch on the surface. Unfortunately, I mean, it's a great acknowledgement for what's in front of educators in the state of California to do it well, but I do want to say that. You know, I see evidence of classrooms because of our pilots and because of the collaboration between the pilots and the classrooms and the professional development training that we're doing, that integration. What it's doing is it's creating energy and excitement in these classrooms. And so when Mrs. Camo brought her kids here or students here, as well as shared her excitement for the tablets that her class piloted this year, what I can tell you is that energy creates a need. And as a board and as a superintendent and as a planning team, we really have an opportunity and an obligation to figure out how to maintain that and continue that. And what worries me is the $173 per child is one-time money. Yet we have a clear ongoing demand for change to support our staff and to support our students and really to support our families who are supporting us and are excited about what they're seeing. So I've had multiple families find me on the streets in town and around and question me, well, we love what we see in my child's third grade classroom, but what about fourth grade? And what commitments or what planning do you have in place? So the danger of the pilot is it creates an expectation. So we're really doing wonderful things despite shrinking resources on one hand. On the other hand, those fantastic things we're doing are going to require us to do some strategic planning with respect.
The District English Language Learner Advisory Committee, DLAC, met on May 14, 2013, and compiled a list of recommendations to support the English learner programs in our district. As required, these recommendations were forwarded to the superintendent by Dr. Delkiskamp on May 20, 2013, on behalf of DLAC. It is required that the superintendent present the recommendations to the Board of Education and that they be recorded in the minutes. So that's what this is about. So I'd like to read to you the three DLAC recommendations to the Board of Education. Number one, reinstitute summer school next year, since this is a real necessity for English learners. Two, provide parent education about the various programs and resources that are available, make presentations regarding resources at DLAC meetings to share in ELAC meetings, send information to all the schools and DLAC representatives, because not all of them attend the DLAC meetings. Since parents do not always receive papers that are sent home, it would be better to offer sessions at the schools to teach parents about these resources. And the final recommendation, 3, there is much concern about the lack of transportation to Los Osos, Morro Bay, and Pacific Beach High School. We would like a plan developed to ensure that all of the families involved know their options so that no child will miss days of school.
Dr. Prater, what would be next steps for these recommendations as far as you and your team are concerned?
Yeah, so each of the three recommendations have carry with it different strategies. So what I would like to do is sit with my team this summer, and I have very specific ideas for each of them. So what I would like to do is sit with my team this summer, come up with some recommendations for how we can address each of them, and bring it back to not just the DLAC committee in the fall, but also to the board in the fall as well. Okay?
Thank you. Any questions from board members? Well, maybe we'll ask if there's anybody from the public who'd like to comment on this item. Okay, seeing no one, we'll bring it to the board. Go ahead, Jim.
Well, you addressed one of my concerns, and that was how do we bias for our own programs as opposed to ones that might be offered throughout the community? Because sometimes parents can't access what we offer, and they may be offered by TEMA or some other summer-like similar program. And the third one is something that came to, well, it was actually a discussion I had with a parent and a student who is attending Morro Bay High School and right now is taking our school buses to Morro Bay High School from, let's say, one of the more remote areas of Los Osos Valley Road and on the edge of our attendance area. This is... RTA once had a bus that ran down Los Osos Valley Road into San Luis and then over to Morro Bay. Apparently that one doesn't go there anymore. It goes from Los Osos to Morro Bay and then down Highway 1. So what we're finding out is that that makes it harder for students that are on that edge to you know, get to a convenient bus stop and then be able to ride the bus to Morro Bay, or if for that matter to get to PB on an RTA bus. So I know that we're still discussing this with RTA. I did believe I read something that they just received a grant, a sizable grant, and I'm certainly hoping that somehow that would work in our favor.
They were pursuing a couple of grants, and I don't know about the success of receiving them at this point, but I did have a meeting this morning at 11 o'clock with the Council of Governments runs a umbrella organization about safe routes to school, carpooling, and other issues. So we're continuing to meet with all the interested parties. RTA is very interested and hopefully committed to solving the issue of Los Osos to Morro Bay High School. And we expect to see some progress in the next couple of weeks in our discussions with them. The city of San Luis, we having they have a five-year plan that they set up and then they operate off of. And one of our benefits is that plan comes open for renewal and modification in the next 3 months. And so we're hoping that they will appreciate some of the benefits of high school back to the board as soon as those things become available to us. Transportation is a big concern for parents. And so we're operating very carefully, and hopefully the city will start paying attention.
I also am
concerned about number three, about transportation. I think you're hearing that, but even indicating that something may occur within the next 3 months. Well, school starts again in 2 months. So I'm hopeful that there are things that will be going on over the summer to be able to inform parents in plenty of time without them having to scramble to either make last-minute arrangements or undo, kind of to have as little patchworking going on as possible. I know this is difficult, but I think we made the budget decisions we did based partly on the assurance that we would be working on trying to accommodate as much of the transportation difficulties faced by our students as possible. I agree that, nothing is ever 100%, and I don't expect this to be either, but I would really like to go into the next school year, knowing that we're working hard and that hopefully agencies or others are working with us openly and in full knowledge of the issues we face here and the obligations we have to our students.
One of the things to be assured of is that we're working on it. The assurance was that we would work on it, not necessarily be successful totally. But one of the things we've learned in the process of working with the other agencies is there's a multitude of options besides just busing, that there are carpool, there's agencies that put together carpool plans for you. You can do multiple wheels, I think they call it, where you ride, you walk, and then you get on a bus. There are people who are in outlying areas are going to have to make an effort in order to be part of the solution too. If the bus doesn't come to your door, you have to go to where the bus is. And there are plans for bicycle, what do you call it, where you have a park and ride for cars. There's bicycle park and rides and healthy living for kids. What we're doing, just to be specific about it, is that we're going to spend next year, hopefully,
busing route.
The city is examining its five-year plan in about 3 months.
Okay,
so it's not going to necessarily be the solution we're looking for in a timely way, but it is part of their mission to think through their next 5 years in the next 3 months.
Okay, so it's the Los Osos to Morro Bay link?
No, this one is the city of San Luis Obispo.
Right, I understand that, but I thought you made a reference to the Los Osos to Morro Bay route. Is that the one that you expect things to develop in the next 2 or 3 weeks?
I expect that to be a successful solution.
Okay.
I've been getting very positive responses from RTA about that. They're studying their resources and their availability of buses and drivers and putting together something that says it failed because there were no riders. And now they have a built-in ridership, so they're actually very energetic about solving this problem with us.
Okay.
I expect that one will be okay.
Go ahead, Jim.
If I can just add, when we've overlaid where students live and are currently riding buses, and of course we're just talking about high school students because we're doing K-8 transportation and special ed transportation, the two areas that just don't seem to be resolved yet are the outlying areas in Los Osos, what Mr. Quesenberry is referring to. So as you get out of kind of the main town or the Baywood or Los Osos area, mm-hmm. out onto Los Osos Valley Road towards Clark Road or some of those mm-hmm. more remote areas, there is no transportation out there, so that's problematic. And then the area around Los Ranchos and the Country Club, there is no bus transportation. The farthest any transport would go is to Tank Farm Road. So those are two areas that, as of right now, are not resolved. But every other area where students are currently riding, we can provide, or the regional providers can provide busing at the times necessary. But there still are a few things that have to get worked out.
Well, it just occurred to me when you were talking about carpooling and so forth, has rideshare been involved in this discussion?
The umbrella organization is called RideShare or ShareRide, RideShare. Anyway, they have an interest in getting RideShare involved in the conversation too.
All right, any other questions? We will move on to item 8.01, which is a public hearing regarding negotiations, reopen our proposal from San Luis Coastal Teachers Association.
Yeah, so we just received the proposed opener from SLCTA about basically they came forward with compensation.
Okay, well, you're becoming a disruptive influence, Mr. Miller. We'll open a public hearing on the SLCTA's negotiates and reopen proposal. Would anyone like to speak to the board during this public hearing? Seeing no one, we'll close the public hearing, bring it back to the board. Any comments, questions by the board members? Okay, seeing no one or none, we'll move on to 8.02. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, and so the district in terms of having our own reopeners, as well as that we are definitely interested in talking about mutual concerns with SLCTA in terms of the contract.
And that will open up the public hearing on the school district's response to the reopening of negotiations. Anyone like to address the board on that item? Seeing no one, we'll close the hearing. And if there's any comments or questions by board members, seeing none, we will move on to item 9.01, resolution regarding Proposition 30, Education Protection Act.
Thank you. With the Proposition 30 passage, it presented schools with a $200 per student allocation, and it has no restrictions on it, and the district is capable of using it in any way it wishes. It is required that the board adopt a resolution about the usages and that we put it in a what they call a resource code so that the state of California can pull that resource code from our computer systems and determine how we are spending the money. But since there's no restrictions on it, it's probably okay. What we determined is the amount of money, $1.33 million, that we're going to receive equals the exact amount of money that we pay for salaries and benefits at Los Osos Middle School. So rather than create a special program, special project, special amount of money to be spent on some item, what we've done is we've substituted general fund unrestricted dollars with this EPA money, and we're going to place the resource code 1400 on the salaries and benefits of Los Osos Middle School and report it to the state in such a manner. There's nothing to be designed that's going to prohibit us from doing that, and I think it's a proper use of the money. So we have a resolution, and I can't see it, so I'm not going to read it to you, but
salaries and benefits at Los Osos Middle School, that frees up $1.3 million. What's going to happen with that $1.3 million that's being freed up?
Actually, we knew about this when we constructed the budget. It's already part of the budget. We just didn't know what specific expenditure we were going to assign it to. It's part of our overall expenditures. We don't assign a specific program to the $1.3 million that's freed up. It just, we don't have to dip into our reserves, and it doesn't add to our reserves.
So this is, I'm assuming this is the money that we talked about that the County Office of Education said, go ahead and book it.
Yeah.
And so we had planned on that, and that when we're looking at the budget, which I believe is the next item, that's already been accounted for. Okay, thank you.
Yes.
So just to put it into words I feel like I could understand, this prevented us from having to cut an additional $1.3 million.
Yes.
Thank you.
I've been reading through the whereases. I'm just wondering about this one. Whereas monies received from the Education Protection Act shall not be used for salaries or benefits for administrators or any other administrative costs.
Yes, we are within the guidelines
within
of that
guideline.
Whereas.
Okay.
Chris?
I'd like to move approval of Resolution 22-12-13.
Motion by Mr. Unger, second by Mr. Quesenberry. It's a roll call vote. Mrs. Holmes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Quesenberry?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Passes 6-0.
Okay, and we'll move on to item 10.01, budget adoption. Mrs. Lang.
Good evening. We are here presenting our 13-14 budget tonight. You'll have the opportunity to review and discuss the budget tonight and possibly approve it tonight, or we can come back at the next board meeting if you'd like a second reading of the budget. As you know, this was a very difficult and painful process. A lot of work went into this. I'd like to recognize everybody that worked in this, which is basically everybody. So, and Russell, his last budget, I'm sure he's disappointed that he'll never get to do this again. So we have a balanced budget. I looked at last year's budget just to see where we were, and last year at this time we had a $6.5 million deficit, so this was really, really good news. Our CBEDs, our enrollment counts, are actually going to go down this year a little bit, or next year, I should say. As you can see, we were at a higher level in 2003-04, and then it really declined up until about 2008-09, and then it started increasing, and now we're expecting it to decrease or at least level off at this point. Our staffing levels will be the same as they were last year. Grades K-3 are at 25 to 1, 4-6 at 28.5 to 1, and grades 7-12 at 31 to 1.2. Which I think has something to do with sections and the way that. K-3 class size reduction will be held at 25 to 1. And our property tax revenues are finally estimated to go up. We got some estimates from the county assessor's office, and we're expecting about a 1.8% increase this year, which is nice because we really haven't had an increase since about 2008-09. It's kind of leveled off or dropped off even a little bit. If you look at our property taxes compared to where we'd be if we were a revenue limit district or a deficited revenue limit district, you can see that we're doing far, far better as a basic aid district. Now, if the local control funding formula goes through, that's kind of going to change everything, and I don't think you'll even use the term revenue limit anymore. And we'll take a look at how that'll affect us in another slide or two. On our multi-year projections, you can see that at our estimated actuals, which is what's included with this budget, we're still seeing a big deficit there of $5.7 million. That should go down a little bit as we close the books. We'll have some carryover amounts. At 13-14 budget, we have almost a balanced budget. If we consider the same amount of property tax increases, so about the same amount of revenue increases with salary and benefit step and column increases, you can see that the deficit's going to build up a little bit, but we also tend to have a lot of changes throughout the year, and our revenues tend to increase throughout the year. So I think that's reasonable. So for the future, keep in mind that we will have carryover amounts that are going to be budgeted in our expenditures, which is going to affect that deficit amount. So you're going to see a difference at first interim. And this is perfectly normal. We do this every means that other districts are gaining money. So depending on our future enrollment and property tax increases in COLA, we're estimating we could be local control funding formula within 4 to 7 years. Some other things to consider is that we have not budgeted anything in revenues or expenditures for the Common Core, as was discussed earlier. We do have the $1.4 million from the EPA funds budgeted, both in revenue and expense, but that is going to expire in 7 years. We will only get that for 7 years. We'll have something's going to happen with the Affordable Health Care Act in 2014, and we really don't know how that's going to affect our expenditures at this point. And there's still a lot of unknowns out there. So with that, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer those.
Let's go to the public first. If anybody in the public would like to address the board on the budget adoption? Seeing no one, we'll bring it back to the board. Chris?
Well, yeah, and I just think one of the things people should recognize when they look at the projection that you've done is that we don't book money, that there are monies that we don't book until we get it.
Right.
Some state and federal funding. And so I think, as you mentioned, this is as close to a balanced budget, I think, as I've ever seen.
Mm.
So yeah. I think you guys have done a marvelous job, and thank you very much.
I can remember a couple of budgets that were balanced to the positive, out of balance to the positive side, but that was long ago and far away. Any other questions, Jim?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting to note how we utilize the unrestricted lottery funds. I think that's is that on your slides there at all? I think
it is not.
It is not, okay. No, but I thought that was worth the public, informing the public about it, because quite often they say, "Oh, what are you folks doing with lottery funds?" Even though it's between 1 to 2% of our total revenue, at best,
it doesn't make up that much revenue.
But I like the fact that it shows here that a certain amount is going to the sixth grade STEAM program at Los Osos Middle School, elementary music, math tutoring hours, elementary PE materials, work experience, and so on. So I just wanted to mention that.
Okay.
Any other questions? How's the board feel about whether or not we need a second reading on this? Okay, I think we can probably move forward with the vote on this, so I'll entertain a motion.
I'll move to adopt.
Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, I'm actually happy to tell you that we are down to having only one teacher left in the district that needs to complete their CLAD requirements. And actually, that person is just, we're just waiting for the paperwork back from the state for them to complete it. So we should be, by the start of the 2013-14 school year, have every teacher in our district CLAD certified. So to think 3-4 years ago, I know all the districts were in this bad shape, but it is a truly great honor and a good thing for us to have that done, and took a lot of work on behalf of teachers to get those requirements completed. So this before you today is just kind of a just in case. So we bring this to you for the board to approve, both in the special ed realm, just in case we need to have a particular intern credential or something where we need a limited assignment, or in the case, I don't know, possibly we hire an out-of-state teacher in the course of the middle of the year who maybe they don't have the California CLAD requirements. So not that we're going to, because that it's often one of our screening items, actually, that we don't hire people unless they have their CLAD certification, but just in case a special position or a hard-to-fill position comes up. So that's basically what we're asking the board to approve tonight.
Would anybody in the public like to speak to the board on this agenda item? Seeing no one, we'll bring it back to the board. Any questions or discussions? Seeing none, I'll make a motion that we approve the declaration of need for fully qualified educators for the 2013-14 school year.
And I'll second.
Okay. Motion by the chair, second by Mrs. Roger. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 6-0. Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. And we will move on to 10.03, approval of supplemental instructional materials, adoption recommendation for grades 9, 12 English. Dr. Delkiskamp.
Thank you. As this item indicates, school and district staff have worked together to identify a supplemental nonfiction textbook to support the transition of our teachers and our students to the English Language Arts Common Core Standards. 100 Grade Essays provides a diverse set of selections and a variety of text complexity to meet the needs of our grade 9 to 12 students. The length of the essays facilitates our teachers' ability to target certain skills, provided information. I'm happy to answer any other questions you may have, and we are seeking approval if...
Okay, we'll go to the public first. Anybody in the public like to speak to this agenda item? Seeing no one, we'll bring it back to the board. Mr. Questenberry?
Just a quick question on the text. I've never seen the text, so this is shooting from the hip here. Does it provide analysis of the various types of essay writing so that teachers and the students can, you know, point to specific things that are being done in the essay and so forth?
That's a very good question. It doesn't do so much the analysis, but it provides wonderful questions that lead to that analysis and questions that help students to write. So there's a very strong link between reading and writing process that this book allows.
Thank you.
I asked Mr. Questenberry about this book, and he wasn't familiar with it, but we got into a very interesting discussion about some of the classical essays that are in literature, and as he was pointing out, they can be quite lengthy and can wander. What'd you say? Essay was an attempt?
Right, I believe it's from the French word meaning an attempt, and I was just saying that some of the really classic ones, Milton's essay, I think it's Areopagitica and so forth, tend to, by modern standards, digress from what we would call a modern essay where they're fairly tight and well-reasoned. It's not that they're not well-reasoned, it's just that they wouldn't fit a modern model for an essay. Mm-hmm. So.
There's a variety in the book, for example, and that's what's so good about this. In this book, we had people on our panel representing special education and English learners, and I know that I opened it up and saw a piece that would be excellent to use with English learners. It's not a very long piece. It is an essay, and it's about your mother tongue and being able to express yourself. So there is a variety. There are essays from Plato but to contemporary writers, and what the teachers expressed was that these are classic essays. They are well-respected classic essays that if our students have this exposure.
Seeing no one, all in favor?
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Passes 6-0. Thank you, Dr. Thomas.
Thank you very much.
And we will move on to 10.04, a proposed revision to Board Policy 5131.2, Students Bullying First Reading, and this is going to be presented by Mr. Robinette.
Yes. Less than a year ago, back in September, the board approved a new board policy on bullying. In fact, we've had lots of bullying sections in various board policies as of new ed code requirements. At the time this policy was adopted, districts were directed to set up some sort of a complaint grievance procedure. We actually used our sexual harassment procedures because those are the most comprehensive, guaranteeing confidentiality and pretty thorough investigations. Since then, we have been informed by CSBA that we are to use our uniform complaint procedures. That is the only change in this policy, is just that we would be using our uniform complaint procedures for any complaint regarding bullying.
Okay. Any member of the public like to address the board on this policy revision? Okay, seeing no one, we'll bring it back to the board for questions or comments. Everybody comfortable with the proposed revision? And can we take action on this reading? Just nod your heads.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Great. In that case, we will go to someone to make a motion. Go ahead, Chris.
I'll move approval of item 10.04.
Thank you. We have a motion, the tandem team here. Motion by Mr. Unger, second by Mrs. Eisendrath Roger, to approve proposed revision to BP 5131.2. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 6-0. We will move on to the action consent agenda. Please let me know if we should like an item pulled. 11.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 11.02, disposition of surplus property. 11.03, acceptance of donations. 11.04, approval of purchase orders. 11.05, approval of warrants. Payroll. 11.06, I'd like pulled. 11.07, approval of the CASSIE waivers. It's confusing.
I move approval of the items with the exception of 11.06.
Okay. Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Quesenberry, who very well clarified that, and a second by Mrs. Sheffer. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 6-0. I wanted to pull that item where The reappointment of Michelle Rowenzown. Am I saying that right? And the reason first of all, I'm sorry that she's not here, but I just want to acknowledge to the public that we are reappointing her for the fourth time, and that's significant effort and work on behalf of the district, and I just wanted to acknowledge on behalf of the board her service and her willingness to come forward. And Dr. Kirk Martinez, could you share a little insight on this?
Thank you. Both her and Rain Rice would like to express to you some of the activities that they have been doing throughout the school year. This year, they elected a new president, Alexa Chamberlain from Templeton. They held a wine raffle fundraiser to raise special education scholarships, and they raised $1,800. And I believe there was a raffle that Chris Unger was... Second prize. And what was that?
It was 6 bottles of
great wine. That's right. There were many outreach events held throughout the county and some activities outside of the county. Those in the county were the Autism Walk, the Deaf Hard of Hearing Agency Night. Outside of the county was the Alternative Dispute Resolution Conference and Legislation Ledge Day in Sacramento. They developed an email listserv, and they were able to send out mass mailers to every person that they knew of in special education, parents, agencies, staff, and they sent a flyer and followed up with an email, and they were able to invite them to such events that I just mentioned. And it ended up with many more participants that they've had in the past. They are having a retreat using a facilitator to help them set up their goals for the next 2 years. They will be discussing outreach, awareness, fundraising, and recruitment. So they wanted to make sure that was shared tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Jackie, so that he can speak to it on for us. And any other board members with advanced agenda? Chris?
Yeah. I really appreciate the information we had on the Smarter Balance assessments and the Common Core standards tonight. I think one of the things that we as a district are going to have to consider is what the effect of those is in relationship to the California standards tests. The California standards test is a measure of accountability both federally and statewide. However, with the introduction of the California Common Core, with the Common Core standards, there's going to be a disalignment of those things. I don't think that's a real word, but which means that there will have to be decisions made about what does accountability look like for this district for at least a year, possibly 2 years. As our teachers are planning the Common Core implementation and introduction of the Common Core standards, I think that looking at the relationship between that and the assessments is going to become critical for our district. And what does that accountability mean, especially also in relationship to our SMART goals? So I would ask that the staff bring back information on how they propose to both implement the Common Core standard and look at the accountability, the CSTs, and what other measures of accountability we might be able to be talking about, which will accurately reflect what the district is doing. And also, I have an interest in helping teachers guide instruction. So if something like that could be brought back, I think as soon as possible, perhaps by next meeting. And I don't know if that would trigger any kind of a resolution or something like that, but I think it is something that we're definitely going to need to talk about, and I would ask for support on that from the board.
I can support that, Jim, as well. Is that a realistic time frame, Dr. Prater, to at least bring back some initial information for us?
Yeah, absolutely. The next board meeting will involve the board approving the LEA plan, and I'd like, just if I could for a moment, have Amy and Dr. Delkiscamp, if you would, just speak to it really quickly, because I think I don't want to get in front of the board, but Mr. Unger, you've brought up an excellent point, one that we've been wrestling with, because our current SMART goals and strategic plan is aligned to CST, California Standards Test outcomes, in large measure. what we're trying to accomplish through our LEA.
Now, you've heard about the abundance of PD, the abundance of assessment that we've been putting in place for the number one purpose of helping our teachers be ready. Now we're saying jump in the pool and go for it, because from what you saw tonight, we can't wait. We can't wait till 2014 to get started with this more rigorous way of teaching and with this more rigorous curriculum. Our teachers' response has been, yeah, but what about those CST scores that I'm held accountable for? What about those principals that hold them up and look? And what about the district superintendent, the district school board that I'm accountable to? They have been waiting for us to give permission to focus on what I would call a much higher and noble goal of teaching to the Common Core state standards. We both have teams busy beginning as we speak, developing potential units of study in the most difficult area, and that's in mathematics, K-12, so that teachers, if we really are able to give them permission and say, go for it next year, here's how. Here are the materials, because what's being adopted is not ready. The materials that we've seen come out so far are less than terrific. We think the materials that better align to the kind of professional development we've put in place are going to be stronger, more rigorous, and better help our kids get ready. So we've been waiting for this, and I'll let you speak to the specifics of what we want to do for LEA plan.
So we do still want to have a measure of accountability, and what's nice is that the district common assessments that we've been putting in place, we have been aligning them with Common Core. So even if we don't include a CST or an AYP measurement in there, and that is a recommendation because we do need to get especially our math teachers focused on Common Core type instruction and assessments, and not have them worry so much about, I've got to cover all these topics because it's on the CST. And so we are making that transition with our common assessments. So for example, at the secondary level, we, the past 2 years, and we'll present this at the next board meeting, we have had mathematics common assessments that we developed that were that have performance tasks. Okay, but now we're taking the next step with that, and our teachers have already identified, since we're a member of the SILS, our students, that's where we are. And so, yes, this LEA plan that we will be presenting to you is really a transitional document that will help guide our district.
If I could add one more piece to that, I think it's really critical to note with these common assessments, in particular in elementary, that we have described them and sold them to our teachers as low stakes assessments, because we've been very, very interested in teachers jumping in, trying out these strategies and moving forward. A personal concern is that if we all of a sudden make them high stakes while we're still getting in, we're sending the wrong message to our teachers. And I really hope that that message can be about, try it. We're here to support you. We've got coaches. We've got support. We've got teachers ready to help you. The professional development will continue next year. I'm interested in seeing common assessments certainly as part of this, but more in the area of what we do with the results and how that's developing our instructional strategies. Okay, I just want to make sure that you looked confused. I want to make sure I'm being really clear about this. As compared to put these out there as high stakes next year in our LEA plan, I think it's more about putting it out there as part of our plan in moving forward in learning with the professional development. I hope I'm saying that clearly. Okay.
I really want to add, though, what I would also like to hear is how we're using whatever assessments we're going to be using to help teachers guide instruction so they can get feedback more quickly on their lessons and do it in a way that encourages those professional conversations that they need to be having.
Some of those conversations have been occurring during the days where we have scoring days and we bring all our teachers in, and you'll see in some of our assessment results that we share in our third student achievement report. I'll just give you an example at secondary. Our teachers coming together and looking at the argumentative writing of students, last year, they recognized they need help with counterarguments. That's an area. Okay, we had a rubric, and we could see that was an area. You'll be pleased with how they attacked that and the results we got, because they were able to sit together, use a rubric, look at the writing, identify an area of need, and then go change instruction to help students.
If I may add to that, with the performance assessment or something that the child would, you know, we would call a test, but it might not look like a test. It might look like a performance task that you give at the beginning of the unit to, for the teacher to be able to assess, sit down in that data team with a similar grade level, talk about what my children know versus what your students know, what our strategies are for making sure that they gain those competencies, and then again give a similar, if not the same, kind of a performance assessment at the end of the unit. We've got teachers across our district that are going to be working really hard to get the beginnings of those units in place for us for next year, but it is exactly what you're talking about, Mr. Unger, to develop a cycle of teachers being able to talk, use data to talk about what's happening in their classroom, learn from each other to improve instruction.
Marilyn, go ahead.
So let me be clear. What we're talking about here is committing to a focus on the Common Core. And while we will still, at least over the next year or two, next year, be giving the STAR test, we understand that instructing in the Common Core model means that teachers may not be hitting all of the areas, there's another word for it, I can't think what it is, but that are required for the STAR testing. So the standards. So we're saying that's okay. We understand that there may be a drop in the STAR testing because we are focusing on implementing the instructional model for the Common Core.
One of the things that we did this year was to develop what we call a traffic light with the Common Core, where we have a red, yellow, and green. The red, for example, in a particular grade level, third grade, red means based on Common Core, we're going to stop teaching these concepts. They either go away or they happen at a different grade level. Yellow means we better watch these. Even though they may not be part of this year's Common Core, in order to develop the skills of students, we can't simply ignore them. The green being, these are Common Core, these are the big emphasis. We think that's going to be a helpful document to teachers.
Okay, thank you.
I would just hope that as we go through this transition process, that parents, what does it mean? How will it help students, all students succeed, and the each family student, the individual students succeed, is going to be important as well. Is this just another fancy trend? Whose idea was this? What is this going to look like? And why is it better? Just what, you know, I think oftentimes people think of that in education, as in many other areas, people change for the sake of change because something different and sounds fancier comes along. So we need to, I hope that we will continue to inform families and especially those who are saying this, what happened here? Why are we doing it this way now? And why is this beneficial?
Our superintendent has been reminding us of this message and the importance to clearly communicate out to parents. Loud and clear and be ahead of this. I can tell you, and I know you do, in our school newsletters this year, our principals have been doing a terrific job of getting that message out there. I regularly will see performance kinds of math tasks in the Sinsheimer newsletter, for example, and then he'll put it out there, ask parents and families to go home and see who comes up with the solution to these. He's getting that dialogue out there. At the back-to-school nights I was able to attend, I saw presentations by principals and instructional coaches about what looks different tonight when you go into your child's classroom that's Common Core-like versus before. I think this kind of effort needs to continue in a large way. our math consultant, Barb Bonke, has agreed to do a couple nighttime presentations next September for families where we'll bring parents in and get their hands on the math manipulatives that kids are using and struggle with some of these difficult problems that we want our students to be doing rather than filling out those multiple choice tests. So we do have a pretty strategic plan, and I think you're going to be happy with the response you'll be hearing from our parents.
At our DLEC meeting on Thursday, we're educating them to translating materials, the frequently asked questions about Common Core, so that we are also including them. And I think their recommendation number two about parent education, those types of activities that Amy mentioned, will align with that. In terms of CST, I think if there are particular questions and really more kind of low-level recall questions, maybe students won't do so well on that. But I think in how we're preparing them for Common Core, the questions that matter that involve more critical thinking, that may affect our CST scores positively.
Thank you, Amy and Rita. And I think Mr. Unger's got another item.
I do have one more.
Is it for them?
I was just going to say, though, we're you know, thinking about your swimming water thing. We're warming the water up slowly rather than throwing people in the in the ice bucket, you know. I think this is great, and I do think we're ahead of a lot of districts in California. I think people are just starting to wake up to the fact that this is real, this is happening, and the communities need to be aware of it. So I'm real stoked about that. I do have one other item that I would like to ask the board about. My nomination for the vice presidency of the California School Boards Association has been accepted, so I am being nominated. The next piece of that is I have to actually submit a nomination package. As part of that nomination packet, I need to get letters of reference or letters of recommendation from, I think, four different people, and those letters will be published in the delegate assembly binder that goes out to all the delegates before the election. The board was kind enough to support my nomination for the vice presidency, and I would like to ask that the board continue to support that by either writing me a letter or doing something on, you know, it's hard to ask this, but doing something on behalf of the board supporting that nomination and supporting my efforts to be vice president of the School Boards Association. And I would need to ask that we do that by next meeting because there is a timeline on it, and it's about the first or second week in July.
Maybe we can take that up at our next president clerk's meeting and figure out how we want to go about that. And then we can bring it.
Mr. Moore?
Yes. Thank you. I really appreciate
it. Yes, ma'am.
If we were to take some kind of action in behalf of Mr. Unger, could it be that the board would authorize you to write a letter?
It might be. That's what I want to discuss with Mr. Questenberry and Dr. Prater.
Okay.
Just because I'm not certain of how we should go about that, but that's a good suggestion, and we will put that in the hopper. Okay.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay. And Mr. Buckman's not able to attend this evening, but I was wondering if Dr. Prater could just give us a quick update on ROP.
Yeah, sure. Jim, would you like to?
Oh, you're the alternate. I'm sorry, Jim. I forgot.
Well, I came somewhat prepared. But, I just wanted to mention that the last ROP meeting was, the most recent ROP meeting was last night here at San Luis Coastal. They were dealing with the concerns that some of the districts that are remaining in the JPA and also those that are in the process of probably returning to the JPA based on Senate Bill 660, which looks as if that's going to channel money through the JPA for most of those revenue limit districts, but not necessarily for the basic aid districts. So they had some proposed revisions to the joint powers agreement that they had. They even had presented a strategic draft plan I have copies of that information for you. I thought it was interesting to note that in trying to address the concerns of districts such as Lucia Marr and Templeton and Atascadero, that they were looking at maybe perhaps changing the composition of the board and to work more closely with the community colleges, particularly Cuesta and Hancock. And they were also looking for the superintendents from their advisory committee to submit some goals and needs, and also to reduce their overhead, and just how they're going to manage the JPA without a superintendent, so to speak. So they were struggling with a lot of issues. They're going to try to resolve, of course, some of these, and of course the other districts that wish to rescind their letters of withdrawal will have to do so by the end of this month. So I think Mrs. Delkiskamp can assure us that the money that we have placed in their reserve fund is coming back to us in September. Is that correct? And there may be some additional monies on carryovers that they have once they've got their budget. And, of course, their budget right now is based on really two districts, being the JPA, Paso Robles and Shandon, and they're expecting the return of several other districts, and that would change their entire budget picture. So it's a complicated thing, and they're going to sort it out hopefully soon.
Mr. President, yes, I think that with the respect to the ROP and the San Luis Coastal's future in it, it would behoove us to watch very closely the development of SB 660 and the language that's finally resolved and agreed upon there. The second, and what I'm specifically alluding to, is the funding mechanism for ROP programs. We want to take advantage of the aspects of the funding that we're capable of now or in the future if we become revenue limit. So we have to pay attention to that possibility, and I think the language will give us some indication of whether we need to form up with an ROP, MOU, JPA, or not. Second aspect is that the ROP was weighted down by its own governance issues, and I'm very interested to see their proposals for how they're going to govern the future of the ROP. When it came time for the districts that were participating to measure the value of ROP as administered by the JPA, it was a question of too many expenses, not enough return. And so a governance issue is, to me, would be how are they going to develop themselves into the future? And so it's not as complicated as it might seem. It just requires time to iron out some of the uncertainties, which are complicated. But once the certainty starts to take hold, I think we'll be able to make a good decision.
Is it likely we'll know that language from the SB 660 before the deadline to rescind a letter, or is that even really not a significant issue for us?
If 660 passes, it has to pass in the next couple of days, actually, or else it becomes one of those bills that's passed over to the next session. I forget, they have a name for it. Suspense file. They'll put it in suspense. So we'll see very soon what happens with 660.
Okay. Thank you. Reports by board members. Catherine.
I had the joy and opportunity to visit a preschool, one of our preschool graduations, and get a video of Dr. Prater and Mr. Quisenberry dancing to the Crazy Chicken, which I can share with you later. But what was most striking, we have a wonderful gem of a teacher in that program, and the children 3 and 4 years old and dressed up and going across stage and accepting their awards and honors was just very, very inspiring. Until you realize that they across the top of the stage was a banner that said "Class of 2026." That's how far we are looking out into the future. It's wonderful. And likewise, at the Laguna EL graduation, Mrs. Ahern does such a wonderful job there of acknowledging each one of her graduates. And what is the most touching thing about that graduation ceremony is when the students call up their parents and give them a rose and thank them for their support and their encouragement, which is really very touching. I had a chance to go to Bellevue Santa Fe Open House, and what strikes me most about the students at Bellevue Santa Fe is their joyful sense of engagement. They are so present and enjoying everything that they are participating in, and that's just a great thing to see out there. I have to mention the band and the choir of Sloha, bands and choir at the PAC, fabulous. I think it's the first time they've ever been together in one performance, which was a great idea. So that was wonderful. And the Morro Bay High School Bands on the Run fundraiser. Dr. Prater's out there with at least 6 members of his family, including his mom and dad, who are celebrating their 50th wedding anniversary, who had to run on their anniversary. It was wonderful. So that was really fun. And running in the sand, man, does that give you a burn or what? Yeah, that's tough. That's very hard. 24-hour relay, Slow High, fantastic. And then Slow High unveiled a mural on the side of the gymnasium over here called Slow Society, which they did a fantastic job with as well. That's it. Thank you.
Yeah, and I was, and as well as joining many of my fellow board members at the various graduations, which is always our favorite time of year, I was able to also just drop by the Laguna Middle School EL celebration and then go over to the Del Mar Open House, command performance, of course. The Morro Bay Academic Awards, which was great. Thousands and thousands of dollars given to Morro Bay High students for their achievements, and just a great time. And then the Morro Bay High Open House too, which was really fun to go see. Some Mrs. Moore with her mural as well, and then Mr. Rapucci's doing his house, and he's now doing an outdoor sculpture class, which is great, which combines welding and the metal technology. So they're doing some cool things at Morro Bay High.
Well, just a quick mention. I had a conversation about graduations, and I think the two most affirmative things I've seen in many, many years was to attend the Pacheco preschool celebration of the students that are moving on to kindergarten, and then to attend the graduations. I do want to commend our students. I think the behavior at the last two graduations, well, actually three, the three that I attended, is far and away an improvement over many that I recall. The students and the parents were very polite, very grateful for their public education, and I thought it was wonderful.
And I just want to add, one thing about the graduation. I was at a local store in Los Osos yesterday morning, and one of the people there said how touched he was by your speech, Eric, and how he was a coach for girls softball and how he wanted to be able to use that message of showing up to really motivate his girls too. So that was a great thing. Thanks.
Thanks, Chris. Okay, anyone else? Then we will be in adjournment until June 25th. Thank you, everyone. Good night.